Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly
sex,
show.
Sex.
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school, pain and suffering, in your face, in your face,
your
face.
Listen to your words that they be preaching, cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education gadfly show.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Here with my co-host, joining us via telephone, Rick Hess.
Hey, what's up, big guy?
How are you, Rick?
I'm good, good. I was just in your stomping ground this morning, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, where was that?
Columbus, Ohio, baby.
Columbus, Ohio. I see. The Fordham Foundation stomping grounds. That's right. That's where we do a lot of work. Did you enjoy Columbus?
It was nice, I got to say. You know, I love those kind of Ohio Valley cities, all those Columbuses and Milwaukees and Daytons. They all seem so American.
Mm-hmm.
They're clean and they're nice and everybody seems relatively relaxed and looks like everybody can find parking pretty easily.
All right. Well, Rick, it's good to have you back on the show. It's been a few weeks since we've been together.
I've missed you.
Likewise, my friend. Well, let's get starting. We're going to have a special interview later today with Checker and Emma Finn. Before that, actually, we're going to play Pardon the Gadfly. And finally, Liam is here with Education News of the Weird. Sound good?
Works for me.
Okay. Good, good, good. By the way, I got to say, we have these little scripts, you know, that help us go through the show just to kind of give us an outline. And it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I mean, Liam, this is from last week. This is last week's script. I mean, what happened to quality? What happened to, you know, your concern for trying to make this the best education policy podcast in the world?
I mean,
aren't we the only education podcast in the world?
There's that John Merrow thing, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
We don't recommend that you listen to it.
I think it's a different niche. I think you've got to really be a, NPR Diane Rehm kind of person to enjoy the Merrow Report.
That's right. I shouldn't say that about Merrow, but I'm just saying we want to be the number one show. So, you know, if our listeners listen to both, that's going to make it harder.
They should. Well, I think for the modern attention span, we're probably a much better situated show.
Well, not if we keep blabbing on like this. Okay, let's get started. Christina, kick us off.
All right. Hard-charging principal Ben Chavis just resigned his post at the American Indian Charter School after coming under new scrutiny by the Oakland Unified School District. While his school's test scores have skyrocketed, Chavis came under fire for his use of threats and humiliation. Meanwhile, most parents love the school. Isn't the point of charter schools to allow families to pick a school that feels right for them?
Now, Mike, you actually know Ben Chavis. I don't. So I'm going to let you speak more to this. But it strikes me that, you know, this is kind of the whole soup Nazi point. If you all remember the famous Seinfeld episode of the soup Nazi who had this soup that was so good that people were willing to put up with all his ridiculous rules.
No soup for you.
And exactly. And, you know, and that's what, you know, to my mind, kind of an open and entrepreneurial and a charter-based system's about. If you've got people who can run a great school, who are great at creating an environment where serious teaching and learning is going on, they can organize it however the heck they want. If it involves teachers running around, hugging trees, and feeding the kids Jell-O,
even Nazis?
If it works and if people want to send their kids there. So I have no idea what Ben Chavis could have done that would prompt, you know, the Oakland Unified School District, which is hardly a paragon of achievement, to want this guy out of a school where he was apparently, you know, delivering the goods.
Well, what he did was that he swears like a sailor, and he has been, you know, quite derogatory towards, you know, various people, parents, students, visitors. I've met Ben. I think he's a great guy, and he's gotten incredible results. And he says, look, I don't give a damn what you think about me. My school is getting results. See, I even want to swear when I talk about him.
Did these parents and students and teachers, I mean, did they deserve to be sworn at?
Yeah, I mean, so there's one example of a kid who called another kid by a bad name. And so Ben made him wear a shirt that said, I am a bad name. I'm not sure what... Oh.
This notion that you're going to be able to go into Washington, D.C. or Oakland or Los Angeles and play patty cake and deliver an education which is going to turn around a bunch of middle schoolers or, you know, high schoolers who've got their heads screwed on backwards is nonsense. Ben Bradley was known for cussing occasionally when he was turning the Washington Post into a great newspaper. I mean, I can't imagine. I would like to think that the Washington Post board of directors never in that period thought of removing him because they disapproved of some of the language he used.
Well said, Rick. I've heard Rick has to make a few choice comments at various conferences as well.
Good heavens.
Good heavens.
Imagine that.
Imagine.
All right, moving on. Once upon a time, voucher advocates believed that if they could get a program implemented, it would be forever safe, as not even Democrats would eliminate a program serving actual kids and families, especially if they are poor. Yet a Washington Times article this week showed the D.C. voucher program in serious jeopardy, with D.C. Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton fighting to kill it. Could this program actually disappear?
Well, of course, it could disappear, but I have to say that I still think this program is going to come through in the end. You know, you've got 2,000 families right here in the nation's capital who are getting this incredible benefit of sending their kids to private school. It's changing their lives. The families obviously love the program, and I think if you get them organized and get them up on Capitol Hill, it's going to be very hard for Democrats and suburban Republicans to take away this benefit from them. The program itself costs next to nothing compared to other federal appropriations. So I think it's just that a matter of the advocates making a case for it. What do you think, Rick?
You certainly make a good point there. On the flip side, let's remember that when the D.C. Voucher program was enacted, the Republicans held both houses of Congress. And the D.C. mayor, Tony Williams, had come out four square saying he wanted the voucher program as part of a three-sector strategy. Well, last time I checked, the Republicans are no longer in charge in either the House or the Senate. And the new mayor of D.C., Adrian Fenty, at least when he was on the city council, was an opponent of the voucher program. So, you know, the fact is that the cards that voucher proponents are holding have changed dramatically since the program was launched. And, I think the thing very much could be at risk.
Yep. And so this is a question, you know, in fact, it didn't even pass the Senate last time around. They never took a vote in the Senate on the bill. It was attached as a rider to an appropriations bill. And it only passed the House because the Republicans went against the rules of the House and held the debate open for an extra 10 hours. So it's going to we'll have to see if the, you know, real live families are able to keep this thing going.
All right. Continuing our theme of Congress, House Education and Labor Committee Chairman George Miller, nicknamed Big George by President Bush, gave a speech on NCLB this week and said he was open to, quote, multiple measures, unquote. What are multiple measures and are they good for America? Is Big George going soft?
Oof, oof, these are big questions. I think first, you know, we should note that this marks could mark kind of the death knell of the Hess-Petrilli notion of the Washington consensus. George Miller is one of the architects of kind of the NCLB consensus. It's a pretty important signal here. Yeah. And if he's scuttling backwards from, you know, what once existed as bright lines, that says a lot about where the reauthorization debate's going to go, over the next year or two.
No, that's right. And the fact that the NEA was just ecstatic with the speech he gave the other day at the press club, I think, does say that he is lurching to the left on this.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, multiple measures. It's one of those words that can cover for a variety of sins. I'm somebody who's, you know, always believed that, you know, math and reading scores are an incredibly useful metric of how well schools are doing. On the other hand, we've somehow over the last 6 or 8 years, they've become the measure of whether schools are doing the job, which I don't think anybody really believes in their heart of hearts. And we certainly don't believe that, you know, how well your kids happen to be doing on the state reading and math assessment at the end of a given school year is a good measure of how well the kids are doing or of how effective a school is. So, you know, if Miller's talking about taking into account considerations like not only a true measure of value added over time, but also trying to think about how do we take into account performance in other subjects, graduation rates at the high school level, students going above and beyond proficient. If that's what he has in mind, you know, there's questions of how, you know, the reality is it's difficult to build those things into a rigorous accountability system. But these are certainly things we're thinking about. If, on the other hand, what he means is kind of the NEA wish list, which is, you get is a Chinese menu of 15 items, and if you're doing passably well on any two of the 15, your school's fine, then it's actually the death of accountability as we've been talking about it.
That's right. I mean, if a school has terrible test scores but good attendance and is therefore determined to be A-OK, that is the death of accountability. It's kind of like saying that a store that is operating at a loss can remain open as long as they get a lot of foot traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
This could be where the debate is heading. All right.
What's interesting here, of course, is the NCLB advocates have vehemently denied for the last 5 years that NCLB is actually a single metric accountability system. I mean, when you say that, NCLB's defenders get red in the face and they say, well, it also takes into account school safety and schools are explicitly required to look at other metrics of performance. So, I mean, what's interesting here is multiple measures, is one of those words that means whatever you think it should mean at a given moment.
Well said, Big Rick. Well said.
I think I remember you getting right in the face when you had to kind of be one of the spin meisters.
Never, never. How's that nickname work for you, Rick? You like that? Big Rick.
Which one?
We're going to call
like
you.
It.
Yeah, Big Rick.
Although given that I seem to keep getting fatter this summer, it strikes a little too close to home.
All right, we'll call you Tiny Rick. How's that?
Ooh.
Is that better? All right, speaking of tiny, it is time for a special interview with the tiniest interviewee we've ever had on the Education Podcast, Emma Finn. And her grandpa, Checker. Let's take a listen. Joining us today in the Education Gadfly Show is the one and only Checker Finn, here to interview his granddaughter, Emma Finn. Checker and Emma, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here. Emma, are you happy to be here?
Yeah.
Big voice.
Yes.
Yes. Can you tell everybody your big name?
Emma Lucia.
Can you use a big voice and say Emma Finn?
Emma Lucia
Burns Finn. Can you tell everybody with a big voice how old you are?
3.5.
3.5. And did you go to preschool?
Yep.
And can you tell everybody the name of your preschool? Big voice.
Mandel Kids Summer Camp.
Mandel Kids Summer Camp. And before that, did you go to Mandel School?
Yep.
And did you have a teacher?
Cricket.
Say big voice.
Cricket.
Cricket was your teacher.
Yeah.
And do you have any friends in school?
Beckett.
And any other friends that you can say?
Colin.
Say big voice.
Colin.
And what was your favorite thing to do in school?
Puzzles.
Okay. Thank you very much, Emma, for joining us.
Great. Well, that was an excellent interview, Checker. You're a natural at this. And I just want to ask you one question about this. After a year of preschool, watching Emma go through this, has this changed your views on preschool education at all?
A whole bunch of things have changed my views and turned me into more and more of an advocate, actually, for preschool than I once was, as long as it satisfies, I think, three fundamental criteria. First, it's got to be, you got to have choices. You can't tell everybody what preschool to go to. Secondly, it's got to be a real preschool where, besides puzzles, you learn shapes and sounds and get ready to learn to read. Thirdly, of course, it's got to be voluntary. I don't think that the United States wants to compel people to send their 2.5-year-olds or 3-year-olds to preschool. But I think that this is a terrific opportunity, particularly for poor kids who are frankly not getting everything at home that Emma might be getting.
Okay. Well, great. Well, Checker and Emma Finn, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
So what do you think, Rick? Pretty cute, huh?
That Checker, he is cute. And that Emma. She's smart, man. That's something else.
So, Rick, we know that you're getting married. Does this interview make you want to start having kids, too?
Yes. They're just so adorable. Because they don't try to get you wrapped into long conversations about, metrics for teacher performance or anything. They get real excited about talking about, some packing crates they see sitting on the curb. I like that.
Good. All right, it is time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what is weird this week?
In Australia, sunglasses are known as sunnies. And at Sydney's Arncliffe Public School, sunnies are now mandatory. Students in kindergarten through year 6 are required to wear them while outside on the playground. And the education minister of New South Wales, a state of which Sydney is the capital, is leaning toward making such a rule a part of the public school dress code. A specialist at the Sydney Eye Hospital said sunglasses were especially important in the summer. Of course, it's currently winter in Australia because Australia is in the southern hemisphere, which is right now tilted away from the sun. Rick, tell us what kind of sunglasses you prefer.
You know, that's a good question. In fact, I managed to break one of my lenses recently, and so we had to replace them, but thank God Jolene was with me, because I never know the name of my brand. But they're pretty cool looking. You've seen them.
Well, of course we've seen them, because, Rick, you wear your sunglasses all the time. In fact, I've seen you at education conferences swearing and wearing your sunglasses.
That's because I believe in school safety. I try to be an exemplar.
So I think this means that either you would be a good replacement for Ben Chavis, or that you would do just well in Australia.
I think those are both... Do you think that the job at Ben's Charter School is still open?
I think it is. I think it is.
Oakland's not that sunny, right? You got a lot of smog, too, so I don't know if the kids actually need to wear their sunglasses so much.
Right. Liam, thanks for that enthusiastic presentation today.
Yes. You brought a lot of gusto to that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Liam is now going to be a regularly featured guest on Florida Public Radio, and he taped
really?
His first one
How
the other
that
day.
How did that happen?
Yeah, well, because he writes insightful commentary on a regular basis that appears in major Florida newspapers.
Was that one of his regional op-eds or something?
Yeah, yeah. I think several of his regional op-eds got some interest. So I don't know. I think that the practice from that format is really paying off here in the Gadfly Show.
So what are you going to do, little reading set pieces like Andy Rooney, or what are you going to do?
Yeah. The Andy Rooney thing. I'm doing that. Commentary.
I like it. Are they paying you?
I don't know. I didn't ask. I don't really ask people that question.
Yeah, then I think we know the answer to that question.
Oh, I didn't Liam. Ask. Nice.
Got my staff trained well. Good.
Bye.
All right, Rick. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. I hope all of you listening have your sunglasses on. Until next week, or the week after, I should say, because I'm going on vacation myself once again. So it'll be 2 weeks. But you can read the Education Gadfly at edexcellence.net. Till then.
I could be Corey Hart, but instead I'm just going to be Rick Hess.
Tiny Rick. And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.